Okay, here's an analogy. To me, life is like going through the entire day being happy and having a good time. Then you get home and someone tells you that all day your pants zipper was open.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Your pants zipper was open.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Hi. Welcome to the program. My name is Ron Van Dam. We do a different, we do a new show every weekday, as long as the day doesn't end in Y. And that's what would do. Welcome to the program. How you doing? You know, I was, I got introspective. This is a comedy show, by the way. Comedy. It's a comedy show. However, every once in a while I get introspective just to screw you up somehow. So, hey, Ron's getting serious. Well, I'm confused. I thought this was supposed to be funny. Hey, when I'm trying to be funny, you think it's supposed to be funny, but it's not. So just, you know, cut me some slack here. Trump is man. I'm not a violent man, but if I ever saw him in the street, I might throw a wad of spit toward him. I don't want to hurt the man. I think you can wash spit off. It's just very, very demeaning to be spit upon, I assume. I mean, it's not going to kill you. I was like, unless you're carrying the Zika virus or something, that might be bad. I don't know. I really don't know. He was in New Hampshire yesterday or Massachusetts. Who cares where he was? And Donald Trump was giving one of his rally speeches. By the way, how can a man who's supposed to be such an intelligent businessman, how can a man of that caliber, running for president, owning this quote-unquote huge Trump company, how could one man be so uneducated, so stupid, so potty-mouthed, he's not eloquent in the least. He sounds like he doesn't. He says, "Yeah, we got to talk about that thing and that thing over there." He doesn't even use words, man. He screws things up. He's the most uneducated moron who makes things up I've ever met in my life. And yet, a large number of people voted for him, and now he's the presumptive asshole. No, you know what? He's not a presumptive asshole. He actually is one. We don't have to wait for an election to find that out, whether he wins or loses. In any event, another stupid. Every time he talks, there's no teleprompter. Then it's just fascinating to listen to, because you just know he's going to screw something up big time. So yesterday he's making some kind of proclamation. And he says, and I will shout it from the loudest building. Donald, you're in the business of buildings, apparently, with your Trump Tower and your Trump building stuff. The expression is shout it from the tallest building. It's not shout it from the loudest building. And perhaps he just misspoke because he talks so much. Perhaps he is just legitimately stupid. And if you say, well, he talks just like I do, he says things that I would say, then you better step back and say, I don't know if you would want to be the president then. Because the one thing I expect the president to do is kind of act like one. I don't care. Your opinions can vary from everything. I don't care what your opinions are. I mean, I do. But if you can't be eloquent about it, get the hell out of here. Go run your little Trump company. You can't be president and talk like that. You just can't do it. It's embarrassing. This will be the most embarrassing president in the world if he ever becomes one. And to add to the embarrassment, everywhere he goes, he is flocked by stupid people. Case in point, there's a Boston conservative talk show host named Howie Carr. And he's a conservative wannabe. He's just an idiot. He has his own talk show here in the Boston area. And it's just embarrassing. He has a large following because there's a large number of assholes. He got up to the pulpit to introduce Donald Trump at a Donald Trump rally here in New England. And Howie Carr, as a lot of people do when they get up in front of these riled up audiences, the speakers tend to make assholes out of themselves. Howie Carr, I don't know you personally, but I'm going to play a clip. It was your introduction of Donald Trump at this rally in a big place, and you made a virtual asshole out of yourself, sir. Here is Howie Carr introducing Donald Trump to the pulpit.
I heard that Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren campaigning. You know Elizabeth Warren, right?
Okay, that's just stupid. The idea here is that presidential candidates and their followers make fun of people and their heritage. And that's disgusting. It's just totally disgusting. It may be something that you laugh about when you've had a few drinks at a bar or behind closed doors in your home if you're going to be perfectly guttural and anal about it. But when you stand up in front of the audience of the United States, basically, because all of Trump's stuff is televised, obviously, or at least goes into sound bites, these are the kind of people that have no filter and think that they're just entertaining people and making them laugh and talking to their base. What you've done, Mr. Carr, is you've just tagged yourself for the rest of your life as a large asshole. American Indians, there's nothing wrong with them. They did go woo, woo, woo every time. So do babies. To stand there, open your mouth, and make the woo, woo, woo sound like Elizabeth Warren has a heritage of American Indian, you are bringing yourself down again to the schoolyard bully mentality of total, total moron infancy. Congratulations, Mr. Carr. And congratulations, Mr. Trump, for associating with other assholes. You have the asshole club membership going strong. Personally, I do live in the United States, and I don't believe that we are comprised basically of assholes. If we are, then I guess I should move to some place that doesn't have assholes. And many people who disagree with me would say, Ron, why don't you move out of the United States? We don't want you here. Perhaps, whatever. Let's just see what happens. Anyway, enough about Trump, and that's about that for now. And to be honest with you, if you believe in some of the things that Donald Trump says, you've been perhaps conditioned by prior generations to be racist and bigoted. whatever the case may be. Or maybe you're not racist and bigoted and you are embarrassed totally about what Donald Trump says, but you kind of believe that his direction is proper. You're probably quite embarrassed about, okay, now I have to vote for an asshole. I'm embarrassed about him, but I have no choice. He's embarrassing you each and every day. And I wish that you would somehow take a higher road, but I can't talk you into who to vote for, who not to vote for. I do wish there was a better candidate than Hillary Clinton, although she may not be so bad, I don't know. But I do know that Donald Trump is a total moron, and I do think there would be... just about all the policies that Donald Trump puts forth have been refuted as being incredibly destructive, not only to the fabric of our society, but to our economic system, our political system, which really has to remain intact. You have to have one in a country this size. It's just a fact. Anyway, I move on. Because I should. Let's just take a little break here so that I don't go from like one subject to the other and totally confuse you, because that would be embarrassing for me, and I'm not really into that. Although I do embarrass myself every day by doing this program.
The Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
You know, what politicians tend to do is they tend to point fingers, and one will point fingers if the other one has pointed a finger toward you. You point a finger back. It's what they do all the time. You know, this ISIS thing is, I was going to say getting out of hand. It's like out of hand, like totally for a long time. This terrorism stuff is just... it's changed our way of life, there's no question about it. And in that sense, perhaps the terrorists have succeeded in making us spend tons and tons of money to protect ourselves against something that's very difficult to protect against, and for changing our way of life. It's not that we don't go into public places anymore, but when we do, the protocol is entirely different than before this crap all began. So they have succeeded, but they have not succeeded in their entirety, certainly, unless you like Donald Trump, who is basically just giving in to them. I know Donald Trump says we have to fight them on every corner. You have to fight fire with fire. But what you're doing is you're giving them a total credence when you do that. Donald says that there should be more waterboarding. And Donald, again, your facts are ridiculous. You are a moron. You don't waterboard people that want to be killed and go directly to heaven anyway. That doesn't really work. Waterboarding on terrorists, as a matter of fact, has been shown to be totally unsuccessful, where other methods of warming up to a terrorist for interrogation purposes tends to yield more information if they feel like that they are talking to someone who can be a compadre or someone who can be sensitive to them, because they do want to spill their guts if they feel you're sensitive to them. So you play that role, and that's how you get the information about what's going on in their head and what's planned for the future by their cohorts. Waterboarding doesn't do anything. These people want to die. And Donald says, well, nobody wants to have their family killed, so you threaten their family, Donald says. No, their families go to heaven and they're reunited, and that's what they believe, so that doesn't work either. So you're dealing with a situation that doesn't follow the conventional torture situation, Donald. You Wharton University asshole. This is why he's dangerous. He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Anyway, So how do you combat this? And here's what, and I'm not thrilled with what President Obama has done. I mean, they're doing tons of shit, but you don't know about it, because if you know about it, then the terrorists know what they're doing. So Obama quite intelligently isn't showing all his cards. So the American people think, well, he's not really doing anything. He's indeed doing everything. Believe me. It's been proven. It's a fact. Now, what I don't understand, though, is that as president, you do have to represent your people as well. And President Obama does get up behind the microphone on the pulpit and say, I denounce these horrible acts and we're going to do everything to stop this on every front. But indeed does not communicate that feeling of he's got our back. No, indeed not. But I don't think anybody's got our back on this. And here's why. After any one of these terrorist attacks, especially the large ones that take more than 50 people to their deaths, it's weird to me that there is not some international conference that's called immediately, where the United States, every country in Europe, every country throughout the world, including Russia and China, one of Russia's airlines, through terrorists, reached demise. I mean, every country wants to fight these ISIS people, quote unquote people, these Islamic terrorists. Why are there not tons of international conventions to gather some of the smartest anti-terrorist heads in the world? These attacks and these recruitments are happening over social media. Why is there, and there are some groups that do actually fight ISIS through the internet. They do exist and they are very active. But why can't all these factions, the military factions, the social media factions, the internet factions, the intelligence factions, the social psychologists who must recognize that these people are being recruited because they are lost people and ISIS takes them in like a gang member. Why can't all these factions get together, have a symposium, an international meeting, perhaps on a monthly basis, and say, we are millions and millions and trillions of people who are fighting evil, which might amount to a few thousand, maybe 10,000 tops. Why can't we, all of us, in such large quantities, defeat something that is really so small in comparison to what we are? I don't think, I'm not sure, but I tried to look into this. I've not found any international anti-terrorism strategy convention, because it's not the United States against ISIS. It's not England against ISIS. It's not Germany against ISIS. It's not Syria against ISIS. It's not Turkey against ISIS. It's not France against ISIS. It's not Spain against ISIS. It's not Belgium against ISIS. It's not Russia against ISIS. It's all of us against ISIS. Why are these individual battles without much connection being waged against the same force? If it's the same force, why don't we all share the same intelligence? Share some of our top intelligence? There are some European intelligence people that might be far more knowledgeable than ours. Why can't we all group together? Now, we do through agencies, but this is larger than an agency. This threatens the security and the lifestyle of everybody on this planet except ISIS. Now, Donald Trump wants to alienate the Muslims. The Muslims are perhaps the key to our success, because Muslims don't want to be tagged as terrorists, as radical Islamists. They want to be tagged as people just like we are. There are gang members in cities throughout the world. Does that mean that every teenager who joins a gang represents every teenager in this country? Oh, you're a teenager. You must be prone to being in a gang and violence then, because you are a teenager by definition. We must scope out every teenager and make sure that they don't get into gangs. We must limit them, check them out. You can't profile like that unless you're a Trump racist bigot kind of person who is running scared of this. What you need to do is employ that very base. Employ those people, Muslims, to help us and say we can grow together. Your life can be better and you are our friends. You're in the communities where sometimes these things are festering. You can see them better than others. You are Muslim Americans. You are Americans before you are anything else. Because in this country you can thrive. Your families can thrive. You have that freedom. You are Americans. Help us. Help us understand, because we are all Americans. Your background is your background. You are an American now. Help us. Help us rid your own name of any type of evil. This is how you win. This is how you win. Not by a country such as the United States saying Muslims are bad. Let's restrict them. Let's question them. Let's take them as a group, put them to the side, and filter them and treat them differently because there are some terrorists in there. Not all of them, but there are some. So let's do the whole bunch. People don't like that shit. You wouldn't like it if they did it to you. I don't know, are you Italian? Are you Irish? What if all of a sudden they said, all right, all the Irish people in this country, we're not letting any more in. And some of you are going to go back, if not all of you, because there's some stuff happening. They're bad Irish people. Therefore, all of you are suspect now. You'd be pissed. You'd say, what are you talking about? I'm a fine, upstanding citizen. I love this country. What are you questioning me for? Yeah, there are some bad Irish people, probably. I don't know them. I'll keep my eyes out for them. I'll help you out, because I don't want this rap on my back either. That's why I don't understand. I don't understand why that hasn't been done. This is a common enemy. Why haven't we all gathered together physically to stop this thing? Or at least lessen it to the point where we can not have it so domineering in our lives. That's the kind of president that I'm looking for. Not me, necessarily. I'm too busy, and I'm too lazy, and I'm just not into it right now. I got this gig, and I'm happy. But why not somebody that can bring us all together in a realistic manner? Not in a political manner, but in a realistic manner. Where Republicans and Democrats can actually do shit, get things done. But they don't get it. They just don't get it. Well, I don't want to let a Democrat in to decide the Supreme Court seat. Well, I don't want a Republican to get a vote on anything. That doesn't help our party. Yeah, that's why people are going for Trump. But then Trump turns around and Trump becomes one of them. And he is one of them. He's their leader. He's not your independent, non-political person. Oh, he's political. Oh, he's political. He's politically branding his opponents. He's politically branding topics and issues. He's a manipulator. You think people in business don't know how to manipulate other people? That's their expertise. You fell for it. You fell for the manipulator. That's what he's doing. He's manipulating you, and you know it. Yeah, Ron, but he's not part of the establishment. He is the establishment. He plays the establishment. He's donated tons of money to the establishment. And now he's hooked up with the Republican Party. Had he run as an independent, might have more legs, as disgusting and ridiculous as he is, he'd still lose. But he would be proving more of a point as an independent. He runs as a Republican. The Republican Party is so embarrassed by him, they can't even stand behind him. They don't even know what to say, what to do. Trump is ruining the party, and to Trump supporters, they like that because they think all parties should be ruined. No. Trump's using the Republican Party like he uses you. All right, enough about him, because I got to feel better. I got to feel better about this. That's what I need. A leader who makes me feel stronger every day, who gives me some hope, some forward thinking, something in the future that looks shiny and wonderful. Not a man standing up in front of me telling me that this country sucks and got to make it great again because it's not great now, and other countries think we're fools and we're stupid and we're idiots. We make terrible deals. We do stupid things. People are laughing at us. Mr. Trump, that is no way for me to feel good about anything, because actually this country is pretty awesome. It's that a lot of you, including you, Mr. Trump, and many of members of Congress have forgotten this. And as I've said in the past, you don't do this through the President of the United States. The President serves, to me, a specific function, doesn't make too many decisions on their own, doesn't have that much power really on their own. But they are the diplomats to the world. This is not, Mr. Trump, this is not the United States, period, anymore. This is a global economy, a global market, a global political scene. Anything that happens overseas affects us directly, both financially and socially. It is a global world. That is how we exist. We don't exist as individual countries anymore. The most important thing is relationships and handling the world for security purposes, financial purposes, and successful purposes, and for social purposes. So I need somebody in the White House who is good at this crap. Donald Trump is the worst at it. That's that position. Then there's Congress, where we make our laws, we change our ways, we form our directions, and they are doing nothing. You vote, your congresspeople, your House of Representatives, your Senate, you vote at that level in order to make those changes. And then you do the same locally. Locally, it's pretty unisex. You know, Republican, Democrat, not a big deal, really. They, you know, they meld a little bit more for the people because they were closer to the people. The House of Representatives, the Senate, that's where you make your changes, kids. Not in the White House. Not in the White House. The White House is the diplomat. Make me feel good. Make me feel like you have a handle on it. You've got to be smarter than I am to be in the White House. When you stand behind that seal that says President of the United States, I got to feel good about you. That is A number one. I have to feel good about you, or I have to feel like I get you, that I understand you. That's that job. That is top diplomat of the world. That's what the President of the United States, that's what that job is to me. All right, let's move on. Oh, God. Oh, Ron, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You know, there's an analogy between doing stuff and mentally doing stuff. And that's what our next guest is all about right now.
Hi, Ron.
How you doing, Marcia?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Good. Marcia Gordon is a mountain climber and mother of two. Probably not in that order, but still, that's what she is. a mountain climber. How did you get involved in this?
Look, I wasn't athletic growing up. I was a girl that liked studying and viewed herself as profoundly athletic. I couldn't run a mile when I was in my early 30s, but I, after my maternity leave, tried to get in shape, and one of the ways was, doing a climb. And I fell in love with adventure. I fell in love with the high that comes from reaching a summit, and the rest is history. That was 7 years ago, and I've broken the world record a couple of weeks ago in this endurance challenge.
Wow. Now, you're involved in what's called the Explorer's Grand Slam. What is that?
Explorer's Grand Slam is an ultimate endurance challenge that has been completed by less than 50 people, and that's climbing the highest peak on each continent and skiing the last degree or last 68 nautical miles to the North and South Poles.
Yeah, wow. So besides the physical aspect of what you do, there I assume there's a psychological aspect to this as well.
Yeah, and that's what I think we are very well prepared for in our 40s, because we have that mental endurance we built through being a parent or being a career person, and that endowment is incredibly powerful. So all of us can tap into that, and I certainly tap into that through that 8-month-long journey.
Oh, so you're not suggesting that we all climb mountains necessarily?
No, but I suggest that any one of us can take on a challenge that was unimaginable to us before.
Yeah. So, but now, how do you psychologically psych yourself up in order to take on challenges? Because a lot of us like get all gung ho, and then when it's time to do it, we don't do it.
Yeah, it's about getting to the start line. You're right. It's all about starting to walk, because often these challenges look more difficult than they actually are. Mm-hmm. And once you are walking, you get the inspiration and you get the support from people around you, but also from you actually doing stuff. Mm-hmm. The other one is, focusing on intermediate goals. I didn't just set out and say I'm going to climb Everest. I said, well, let's climb, Mont Blanc, or let's climb a smaller mountain. And then, you get the encouragement from being able to achieve your intermediate goal, and that leads you to higher goals.
Yeah, let's talk about the encouragement, because I understand that your two children actually get involved, but not through mountain climbing physically themselves, necessarily.
That's right. They're 6 and 8. They are too young to go on long endurance challenges. Mm-hmm. They are very, very sporty, but they write messages on my equipment using sharp extreme markers. Those messages stay on through rain and shine. Mm-hmm. And, for them, this is a part of being with me on the journey. When I send back pictures, on my Instagram account of me, let's say, climbing Everest, they see that, gosh, Mommy had that iceberg where I wrote a message. So it's that dialogue, and them feeling that they were of help psychologically at the times when times may have been hard for me.
Well, that's really cool. So it's good for you, for the inspiration. It's good for them to see that they got to the top of a mountain at least in a different way. Wow.
They can brag to their friends at school.
Yes, they can. I was on the top of the mountain, or at least what I wrote with a Sharpie is, and that's then they can say to their friends, well, you don't have that, do you? And they go, no, I guess we don't. I guess we don't have that. Wow, this is very dangerous what you do, though. Did you always have an element of danger to your personality?
Well, look, I've been a risk taker, and risk taker career-wise, but also I manage money, and to manage money is about managing risk. So it is not about thinking that something is dangerous. It's by thinking what elements are unsafe and how they could be mitigated. So in case of Everest, for example, you have two dangers. One is the cold management, right, because if you're going in up that high, it's extremely cold. So being able to manage that through the right layering, through understanding when you are getting cold or when hypothermia is real, is important. So I've done a number of cold climbs before going to Everest, or it's altitude, right? And it's about training, and I've done lots and lots of high altitude peaks in the past few years. So knowing, again, how to manage that aspect of danger, was important to be successful here.
Yeah, wow. Now, you actually are in world record books, I understand, for quite a few different reasons.
That's right. I qualified for the Guinness Book of Records for climbing 7 summits. That's, that would have been completely unthinkable a few years back.
And then the speed with which you do it, is that also significant?
Yeah, because the previous record was 11 months, and I was able to do it in 7.5 months.
Wow. That's a long time. I mean, that's fast. It's fast in comparison, but that's a long time to be climbing.
Yeah, it was over 100 nights in a tent. But you know what? I got to love it. I got to love it. It's an amazing privilege to be out in the elements and to be, you know, to come to all these incredible places on Earth.
I'm in awe of what you've done, the sleeping in tents for 100. I can't even stay in a bad motel one night. It's wow, that's something. Well, you're inspirational. There's no question about that. And I know that Sharpie Extreme, the Sharpie markers, are sponsoring your visit here with us today. And it's a pretty cute idea for the kids to get involved that way. I like that.
Thank you for having me, Ron.
It's a pleasure. How do we get more information about all of this?
Well, look, I'm very active on social media. Mm-hmm. I have an Instagram page, and the hashtag is at Grit and Rock, G-R-I-T and Rock as one word.
Okay. Do you have anything planned for the next excursion?
Sure. Well, I'm going to do an adventure holiday with my kids. They deserve that time, and I deserve that time with them.
Yeah.
So we're going to Costa Rica to do fun stuff like canyoning and cycling. And, you know, later in the fall, I will do what is an ultimate mountaineer's feat, which is doing the first ascent of a mountain. Nepal has recently opened up a number of peaks, and that's my dream, to do an ascent that no one has done before.
Wow. Well, pleasure speaking to you, and sounds like fun to follow your adventures here. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, Ron. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Gentlemen, you know that when you decide to get engaged, you'll be making one of the most important investments of your life. Think about it. From the moment you get down on bended knee and present the ring, how much you actually love someone will be judged solely on the size of the stone you buy. And not just by the one you love, but by literally everyone she knows. And strangers. At Schlickershek the Jewelers, we know that when you're about to cough up what amounts to a few months' rent to obtain the exclusive naming rights to a vagina, you want to be able to be sure that you've made the best choice. So if you've decided it's time to staple gun your man tackle to a single hitching post and to never be able to experience the simple joy of a meaningless hookup without handing over half your stuff, come to Schlickershek the Jewelers and see our amazing line of certified high-quality shallow female ego strokers. Take it from me, Herbert Schlickershek the. I'm not just your local jeweler, I've been married 6.5 times. Vegas marriages, boys. Very easy to annul when the shrew goes south on you. And she will.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it, too.
You can't.
But sometimes he says bad words.
Not a lot. Sometimes. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. I'm an enigma. You know, there's ways that you can keep in touch with us. I don't suggest any of them, really. One way you can do it is by the email system of America, the international internet system of exchanging words through various internet vehicles. You got your AOL, you got your Gmail, you got your Comcast.net, you got your toenails, you got your fungus. I'm talking about ronvandamshow@gmail.com, ronvandamshow@gmail.com. If you have any suggestions on topics you wish me to expound upon, I will expound upon it. Sounds disgusting, but I shall do so. Or you can go to our Facebook thing, which is newly devised. It's New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. Uh-huh. Or you can go to the Facebook and search us, The Ron Van Dam Radio Show, and you'll find us there as well. And the show, of course, is available right here, wherever you're listening to it, on the New England Broadcasting website, on Podbean, ronvandam.podbean.com, I believe. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on TuneIn Radio and various other outlets as well. My time is up for today. Thank goodness for both of us. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace.